Now, my goal at the end of this evening is that everybody here will understand a lot about opening the door at the Seder, and also that there'll be an inspirational moment for our Pesach in quarantine as relates to the opening of the door at the Seder. So that's sort of the plan for this evening. There's in the chat section, there's a link to some sources if you want to look at the sources. Hopefully we'll learn something about why we opened the door, and also we'll be inspired for the Seder in quarantine. Okay, so let me get something out of the way at the start. We are not opening the door at the Seder for Eliyahu HaNavi to visit us. I'm sorry about that, but we are not opening the door for Eliyahu HaNavi to come in. Can anybody suggest where this idea came from that we're opening the door at the Seder because Eliyahu HaNavi is visiting us? Everybody here, I guess, is very religious. Well, for the kids, and in particular, everybody knows that there's another major religion in America, and that other major religion in America has a practice that on the holiest day of the year, they tell all the kids that, Saint Nicholas is visiting. And he visits the house at midnight. So all of the next door neighbors who are Christian all have this thing that at midnight they get a visit from an old man with a white beard on midnight of their favorite holiday. So we as Jews said the same thing, except instead of Saint Nicholas, Eliyahu HaNavi is the one visiting us. That's probably where the custom came from. There's a discussion about a cup of wine for Eliyahu. Many of us fill a cup of wine and say that this cup of wine is being filled for Eliyahu. That has some basis, but the cup is not for Eliyahu to drink from the cup. The cup is a cup that symbolizes redemption. The songs to God of redemption, and Eliyahu is a figure associated with redemption. It is not for Eliyahu to drink from the cup. He's not coming into our house and then drinking from the cup, even though there's a cup for Eliyahu. Now, I can prove to you that even if our goal was for Eliyahu to visit our seders, that we don't need to open the door for Eliyahu. Because Eliyahu has a number of special powers and special abilities. Eliyahu lives forever. Eliyahu lives forever, and he has another special ability too. Do you know what Eliyahu is able to do? Eliyahu can move through walls. And I can prove it to you, because when does Eliyahu visit us? We don't leave a cup of wine for him. We leave a seat for him at Bris's. Have you ever seen anybody open a door at a Bris because Eliyahu HaNavi is visiting and we need to open the door for him? No, because Eliyahu evidently can move through walls. You do not need to open the door in order for Eliyahu HaNavi to come in because he can get in through the wall or he can come down the chimney or something like that. So the custom of opening the door at the end of the Seder is an ancient custom in Judaism, but the custom of opening the door at the end of the Seder is not to let Eliyahu in. Okay, where does this custom come from? So a rabbi by the name of Israel Brin, he came from the city Brin. I'm not sure where the city Brin is. And I went on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia told me that there were eight different cities in Europe that go by the name Brin. So now I don't know where he was from, but I'm going to go with Czechoslovakia because Brin is a city in Czechoslovakia. And he's in the 15th century. And Rabbi Israel Brin is the first one to talk about opening the door. And he writes, Noagin liftoch hadelet. It is a custom to open the door at the end of the Seder during Shvoch Chametzah. Why? De'isa b'or zaruah, quoting the Or Zaruah, which was written about 200 years earlier. Shelo lenol dlatot habatim b'leil Pesach. It was a custom not to lock your doors on the night of Pesach. De Pesach leil shimurim hu, because Pesach is the night that God protects us. The custom was to open our doors, not to invite Eliyahu HaNavi into our homes. The custom was to open our doors to welcome robbers and thieves into our home. And Jews would not lock their doors at all on the night of the Seder, because Jews basically said, God will protect us. And because God will protect us, I don't even need to lock the door. Nobody can come and harm my home. And that is where the custom originated to open our doors at the Seder. Right. So the Midrash is that it's a time of protection. That's in the Midrash. And that Midrash later turned into, if it's really a night of protection, we should open the door to the home. Now, I don't know how. That's a very good question. And the truth is that at my Seder, every Seder I've ever been to, the door is locked and then they unlock it for Shvoch HaMatzah. But maybe you're right. Maybe the whole thing should be unlocked, the whole Seder. So that's sort of the idea, which is maybe you could leave the door open again to show our faith that God is going to protect us. Right. Right. So Jamie's 100% right, and I'll make this point even stronger. Opening the door for our ancestors was a radical statement of faith in God. Because if you are opening the door, as Jamie said, in the most dangerous time of the year, and you are a Jewish minority in a Christian country, and you are opening the door, you show that your faith in God is so great that you're doing something that's basically ridiculous, but you're still doing it because your faith in God is that great. This seems to be the origins of opening the door on the night of Pesach. Mashal ma davar domeh, it would be as if you took yourself on the night of the Seder, you went into the emergency room in one of our area hospitals, you didn't have a mask, you didn't have anything, and you went around touching everybody in the face and saying, I'm not going to get sick. It's crazy. But our ancestors. But the difference is that the idea of doing this is only the night of the Seder, because our crazy ancestors believed that there was a promise that God was going to protect us on the night of the Seder. And they believed that so intensely that they opened the door to the world and said, world, come and get me. I'm not scared. God will protect me the night of the Seder. It's a promise from God. And that's why they opened the door. I'm not telling anybody to go to the hospital and do that, but it's just to illustrate how opening the door was a statement of tremendous faith on the part of our ancestors. Now, the Rabbi Brin goes on and says V'zeu emuna b'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. By doing the door, by opening the door, we show our faith. And as a result, al yedei zeh ra'ui lavo Mashiach. We so badly want Mashiach to come at the end of the Seder. And what's interesting is that the beginning of the Seder is all about Yitziat Mitzrayim, our exodus from Egypt. But the end of the Seder is not about our exodus from Egypt. The end of the Seder is our exodus from the current exile. Can anybody tell me a part of the end of the Seder which has nothing to do with the exodus, but instead is all about the coming of the Messiah, something that we say towards the end of the Seder? Well, the obvious one is the Shana Haba Yerushalayim, but we have a lot of other options too. Some of the songs, Adir Hu, Adir Hiru, Yivne Beso Bakarov, God rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. In Hallel, we say, Lecha Ezbach Zevach Todah, rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll offer a Thanksgiving offering. The end of the Seder turns into an aspiration for the coming of the Mashiach. That's why we have this cup for Eliyahu, who, as we read in the Haftorah this morning, heralds the coming of the Mashiach. And that's why we're opening the door, to show that we have so much faith in God that in a merit and in thanks for our faith, God should bring the Mashiach. Okay. This is almost... I'm sorry? Yeah, especially this year. I know as diaspora Jews, as American Jews, you know, we always say that we want Mashiach to come, but sometimes American Jews, we say we want Mashiach to come, but do we really believe it in the kishkes? Do we really want to leave our comfortable lives in America and have to spend every Pesach in the old city of Jerusalem eating meat and matzah in a sandwich? Is that something we really aspire to? But this year, I think I can say for everybody that we're really feeling that we need Mashiach to come, b'mheira v'yameinu, more than we've maybe felt in any Pesach for a long time. So this year, again, when you open the door, don't say, oh, Eliyahu HaNavi, come. But open the door and say, I'm showing my faith in God. And as a result, that faith should inspire God to bring a redemption to our people and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash b'mheira v'yameinu for next year. That's an interesting suggestion. Why is it that Eliyahu HaNavi is able to move through doors when he visits a bris milah, but the Shabbos queen is not able to move through doors when we say Lechadodi? It's a very good question. I don't have an answer for that question. Okay. I could have ended the shiur here and bid everybody farewell after a 15-minute shiur, and you all hopefully have learned something, that we don't open the door for Eliyahu, we open the door to show our faith. However, I'm going to now suggest a second explanation for why we open the door, which also carries a lesson for us as we are all isolated in our homes this Pesach year. In order to do that, I have to have us look at a pasuk in the Torah, which appears every year, but which we don't always necessarily think about as much as we might want to. Okay, this pasuk I now put in the chat. So if you're following here on the Zoom, you can look in the chat and look at the pasuk. The pasuk says a law regarding the Korban Pesach, which is, Bebayis Echad Yeachel, you have to eat the Korban Pesach in one bayit. Lo sotzi min habayit min habasar chutza, the meat of the Korban Pesach is not allowed to leave the house. Imagine you are in Yerushalayim, eating your Pesach when the temple stood. There's a rule, there's a law saying that you, when you eat your Pesach, you are not allowed to leave your house or take the meat out of the house while you are eating your Korban Pesach. This is the rule when the temple stood. Can anybody think why this was a rule historically that you were not allowed to take the meat of the Pesach and bring it out of your house while you had to eat it in your home? Can anybody think why that might be, where that might have come from? I'm sorry, Arkady, I didn't hear you. Okay, Arkady, as you may know, has been learning Kodshim and Taros. He's been learning all about purity and impurity for years. So he is given the advanced interpretation of this. But before we get to the advanced interpretation, I want to give the simpler interpretation first, and then Arkady will get to the advanced interpretation later. Let's start with a simple interpretation. Yes. Okay, so part of it is that it's supposed to be with one group. That was the beginning of the pasuk, bebayit echad ye'achel, that you should make sure to eat the Korban Pesach with one group. However, I think there's something more, and everybody here is giving brilliant explanations. I'm going to give a very, very simple explanation. When the Jewish people were in Egypt and they offered the Korban Pesach, why were they not allowed to leave the house? There's a lot of bad stuff going on. Makat Bechorot, the plague of the death of the firstborn, was taking place while they were eating the Korban Pesach. It would be crazy to go outside because there was a plague going on. Literally, the first Pesach of our ancestors' history, there was a plague going on during Makat Bechorot, and that's why they couldn't go outside. We are reproducing what they did, and we are reproducing the idea that you don't go outdoors during the Pesach because our ancestors celebrated the first Pesach with a plague going on, and therefore they couldn't go outside during the Pesach, so we are not allowed to go outside during the Pesach either. Now, you may be familiar with this idea, because this idea is actually part of the response to the Chacham, the wise son in the Haggadah. Does anybody remember, for some people on this shir, it's been 2 hours since you looked at the Haggadah, because some people look at it in Shabbos Haggadah, for some of you it's been 12 months. Does anyone remember, what is the response that we give to the wise son in the Haggadah? What do we say to the wise son? Yeah, we say to the wise son, Emaftir and Achara Pesach Afikoman, that you're not allowed to eat dessert after you eat the Pesach. Okay, but okay, Mark, we can get there. Give me a half an hour, I'll get there. Did you ever ask yourself why you can't eat dessert after you eat the Afikoman? Do you ever ask yourself that question? Why can't you eat dessert after the matzah? Why does the taste have to remain in your mouth? Now, who said? Did we ever say the taste has to remain in your house? And you make kiddush every Shabbos. We don't say the taste of the wine has to remain in your mouth. That's a good question. If the taste of the matzah has to be in your mouth, maybe you can't brush your teeth. Okay, but why can't you have between afikoman and benching, why don't you have some Pesach de cupcakes? Right, you can't eat dessert after the Pesach. Right? So here's the thing about desserts. I have never in my life eaten lunch at a meal and then gone to somebody else to join them for the middle of the main course. I've never seen that happen. You don't on Shabbos finish eating and then go to your next door neighbor and say, "Hi, I'm here to have some cholent." But by a show of hands, raise your hand if it's ever happened that you've either invited a friend to join you at the end of the meal for dessert, or that you've gone to a friend and joined them for dessert. Raise your hand if you've ever done that. Everybody does this. So what's the issue here? If we allowed you to eat dessert at the end of the Seder, what would everybody do? They'd finish their Seder. And when they'd finish their Seder, they would go to their friend's Seder. And what would happen when they're going from one house to the next house? They would end up taking some of the Korban Pesach outside of their house. And that's why you can't eat dessert after the Pesach, because it might lead you to eat the Pesach in a different house. And that is why they made this rule in the Seder. So I'm giving Rav's explanation. I felt, Yossi, that since everybody always gives Shmuel's explanation, I could give Rav's explanation for the purpose of this shiur. Okay, so Rav is of the view that the reason why you can't eat dessert after the Pesach is because it might lead to a problem of people eating outside of the house. Now, I don't know if anybody said Yotros this morning. I don't know if anybody here said Yotros. There was a line in the Yotros which actually talked about this, that about whether you're allowed to go to somebody else's house, but it looks like nobody said the Yotros, which is fine, so I'm just going to move on. I don't know. I mean, it's just a poem. I mean, there are probably parts that you need a minyan for, but part of it's just a poem. So you could probably say it. Okay. Now, I want to go back to what Arkady said, and there's a profound lesson in all of this, which Arkady shared with us after all of his years studying about Kadashim, holy things, and Taharot. In Judaism, we have a concept about eating holy things in holy places. In this morning's Torah reading, Parshat Tzav, we talked about eating holy sacrifices in holy places. Now, usually, when we say eat a holy sacrifice in a holy place, what do we mean? What's the holy place that you have to eat the holy sacrifice? The Beit HaMikdash. This morning we leaned, Matzot ye'achel b'makom kadosh, eat the sacrifice in a holy place, b'chatzar ohel moed yochlua, eat it in the Beis HaMikdash. The Seder is a holy meal, and the Korban Pesach is a holy sacrifice. But what is the holy place where that sacrifice has to be eaten? It's not the Beis HaMikdash. It's not Yerushalayim. It's your house. And for those of you who want to see me proving this, in the source sheet, there's a huge box called the Box of the Talmudic Details, which I won't bore everybody with, but that box is where I prove the point that the most sacrifices have to be eaten in a holy place, by which we mean the Beis HaMikdash, or by which we mean Jerusalem. But the Korban Pesach is unique that it has to be eaten in a holy place, namely the house. The Korban Pesach, according to the Rambam, cannot be eaten outdoors. because you have to eat it in a holy place. You need to construct a house around the consumption of the Korban Pesach to construct this holy place in which the Korban Pesach is going to be eaten. There's such a profound lesson in that, that as Jews, normally sacrifices are eaten in holy places, namely Beit HaMikdashes, and on the night of the Seder, you eat the meat in the holy place, also the home. And all of us, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash right now, but we don't have our shuls either right now, our Mikdash Ma'at, which is taking the place of the Beit HaMikdash, and we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, and we don't have the shul, which is a shadow and approximation of the Beit HaMikdash, but we have our homes, which is the shadow and the approximation of the shul where we davened this morning and where we're davening throughout this entire isolation period. And that is the lesson of the Seder, that the home can be that holy place, replacing the shul, replacing the Beit HaMikdash, replacing Yerushalayim. Our ancestors did it one night a year at the Seder, and that is what we are doing now in the current time that we're living in. Our homes are a mini Beis HaMikdash. Now, my Shabbos clock just turned on the light. Turns off the light. Give me a second. Sorry about that. Now, I think a few years ago, I actually shared a wild insight that I had. There is a statement in the Talmud about somebody who celebrated Pesach in the city Tveria. Anybody here ever celebrate Pesach in Tveria? Anybody here? Nobody? Okay. Mark has celebrated in Tveria, Mark? Mark, you're on mute. We can't hear you. Okay, Mark, in Tveria, you were on mute. Now you're not muted. Not the Seder. There's a Gemara which talks about a Seder in Tveria, and Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen of Vilna quotes his brother, Rabbi Bezalel the Kohen of Vilna, who quotes a random visitor from Jerusalem who spent time at a Seder years beforehand, who says, how could you have a Seder in Tveria? Because the Seder involves a Korban, and all Korbanot, all sacrifices, are generally consumed in Jerusalem. So how do you have a Seder in Tveria? So my answer is, every sacrifice has to be eaten in Jerusalem, because every other sacrifice, the locus of holiness, the place of holiness, is Jerusalem. But in Korban Pesach, it doesn't have to be eaten in Jerusalem. It has to be eaten in the home, wherever the home is constructed, and Tveria is able to achieve that goal as well. Or maybe you went to Tveria and then you went back. I wrote an article about this. It's available on the internet if anybody's interested, or you can look at the source sheet. The point is, it is without a doubt that the Korban Pesach is allowed to be offered this year. I think there's a story, there's always this one guy who tries to bring a goat on the Temple Mount every year before Pesach to offer the Korban Pesach. If there is no halachic impediment to offering the Korban Pesach this year and eating the Paschal Lamb this year, there's a political impediment that it would start a war. But halachically, we could offer the Korban Pesach this year if we wanted to. No, it has to be done in Jerusalem. The blood has to be sprinkled in Jerusalem. About the eating is a different question. The blood, and also it has to be eaten in Israel, and Tveria is a walled city in Israel, so it might be Tveria is like the one place that you could actually possibly do this. It's not the topic of the shiur, but after I finish the main part of the shiur, anybody wants to schmooze more about a Korban Pesach in Tveria, we could schmooze about that afterwards. Okay. Because most people say that it needs to be in the home and in Jerusalem. Namely, you need both. I'm giving a very, ambitious suggestion about what about a home in Tveria, not in Jerusalem. But most people say it needs to be in the home, and that home needs to be in Jerusalem. Oh, you take a horse? A horse can't get to Tveria? Okay, whatever. We'll talk about Tveria at the end. At the end of this year, for the people who are interested in that. But I want to go back to the business of our seders. Now, what's interesting, is there anybody here who's going to a hotel for Pesach this year? No. This is the one year I can actually say something about a problem with you eating the about having your seder in the hotels. I do believe that one is not allowed to eat a seder in a hotel for this reason. Because what we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes is that when you eat the afikomen, what do you need to construct when you eat the afikomen? You need to construct a bias. And the Rambam has this idea that you need to be surrounded by a divider, sort of, to indicate the place that you're eating in. And it's actually halacha in Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to eat the afikomen on two different tables. You know, maybe somebody here remembers back when you had a seder of like 30 people and you have two tables, maybe. So, no, okay. So Arkady, if your two tables are touching, then you have one table. But sometimes you have one table here and one table here. So you're not allowed to go back and forth while eating the afikomen because there's this notion of being in one place, in one home when you eat it, and therefore you're not allowed to go back and forth. So I think that if you happen to be in a hotel for Pesach, you cannot eat the afikomen in a large communal dining hall because you don't have a concept of a bias for the afikoman. Okay, whatever. That was just an aside. If so, why are we opening the door at the end of the Seder according to this approach? What do we do when we open the door? Everybody's looking at the fact that we're pouring this cup for Eliyahu when we open the door. But what did we just finish when we opened the door for Elio? We just finished benching, which means we're finally allowed to leave our homes. In essence, according to this approach, the entire Seder, you're forced to close the door and stay in your home, call it a social isolation kind of moment. You're not allowed to leave your home while you're in the middle of the Seder because you have the Paschal Lamb, the Korban Pesach, which is not allowed to leave the domicile of your home. But then you had the Afikomen, which is the point of the meal at which you would eat the Korban Pesach, and they ate it up good that there was not a single piece of meat left. Nobody wants to leave over from the Korban Pesach. It's a holy sacrifice. You eat every last bit and then there's nothing left. Once you've finished eating the Korban Pesach, what have you now been released from? You are now released from the requirement of having to stay in your home. And you're now able to leave your home, and that's why we open the door to show that now is the moment in which you're allowed to leave the home and interact with the outside world. If you think about the two approaches that we developed about why you open the door at the Seder, the two approaches are opposites of each other. The first approach said we're opening the door to welcome something in. We're opening the door to welcome into our homes, whether it's Eliyahu HaNavi or Mashiach or the Russian Cossacks who we're going to invite them into our homes because God is going to protect us. According to the first approach, you're opening the door to invite somebody in, just like in Kabbalat Shabbat and Maimonides, we open the door to metaphorically invite the Shabbos queen in. But according to the second approach, we're opening the doors at the end of the Seder to let ourselves out. It's saying that the Seder is a moment in which we're all experiencing the holiness within the confines of our home, and that intense home holiness experience is ended, and now we open the door and we join the outside world. Yes, Jeremy. Correct. And so Jeremy is pointing out correctly that in our days, you open up the door and it's freezing outside and it's late outside and we're in a cold climate. And so we just go back inside. But there was a custom that people would actually leave the home at this point in the Seder and they would recite Hallel with friends, with somebody else. The Seder, you have to eat in your home. You're not allowed to invite anybody in because they might eat the Pesach in your house, which they're not allowed to do. And they can't, and that would be a problem. But Hallel, you can have with somebody else. So the practice used to be that after you open the door, you could leave the house and you'd go to your next door neighbor and you'd sing Hallel together. Multiple Seders would come together for Hallel. Just as we mentioned before, is the common practice in America today that you can have people going to other people's homes to share with them for dessert. So this idea, the idea of opening the door for Eliyahu HaNavi is maybe 200 years old. The idea of opening the door in order to show that God protects us from our enemies is an idea that's maybe 600 years old. But the idea that at the end of the Seder, the idea that the door must be closed for your Seder, because it's an intense family Kedusha moment for the entire Seder, and then at the end of the Seder, you open the door and you go out, is a practice that might be 2,000 years old. Yes. So the Halach Ma'anya, that's a question not on my shir, that's a question on the Halach Ma'anya. The Halach Ma'anya is very weird, we're inviting people to join us for the Seder. On the night of the Seder, it's too late to join somebody on the night of the Seder. It's too late. You have to invite them before the sacrifice is slaughtered. Chances are Halach Ma'anya was written to make guests feel better. Namely, it was written because there'd be guests sitting around the table who might feel awkward that they were there and maybe that they aren't being invited. So the Halach Ma'anya begins the Seder as a way to signal to the guests that they should feel welcome in our Seders, but it actually wasn't an invitation to people outside. After all, who's going to hear the Halach Ma'anya? You say the Halach Ma'anya in your house with the door closed. No one's hearing it. The guests would have already been invited long before, but the Halach Ma'anya is just a way to, make them feel more comfortable. Right. There's no problem with guests coming to your house for the Seder. The halachic issue is that you can't have Seders in two houses. So you couldn't have a Seder in your house, and then your next door neighbor invites you, if you finish early, to go and join them for the second half of their Seder, right? So that's the kind of thing that you can't do until you're done with benching and we open the door, and that's the signal that you're allowed to leave your homes and join somebody else's Seder. That's a great question. Honestly, I've never ever thought about that question. It says, "Atem lo teitzu ish mipetach beito ad boker," which sounds like until the morning. You're asking a very good question. If they finished the Pesach by midnight and Makat Bechor happened at midnight, why couldn't they leave the house at 2 in the morning? I've never thought of that question, but that is an excellent question. I don't know. So, Acharei Kechlos HaKol, we were having this conversation any other year, you probably would have said that the first answer is very inspirational, that it's all about God protecting us, and that's very inspiring. And the second answer is not very inspiring because it's all about the fact that in theory, we have the right to go to our next door neighbor and say challah with our next door neighbor. Because no, that's what everybody's dying to do at 1 in the morning, to go to your next door neighbor and sing challah with them. But this year, when you all open the door at the end of the Seder, this is what I want you to think. I want you to remind yourselves that just like we are in many respects stuck in our homes and unable to go out, our ancestors every year on the night of Pesach were also in their homes and did not have the license to go out. And every year at the Seder, they opened the door to make a statement, saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, up until this point in time, we were not allowed to leave our homes, and now we are allowed to leave. And I want you to utter a prayer to yourself at that moment and to say, this Pesach, we're stuck in our homes. We're not able to visit our families. We're not able to host our families. We're very much constrained. But in the merit of Kadosh Baruch Hu, of the Seder that we had, and the merit of our opening the door, this door should metaphorically symbolize that by next year on Pesach, we should again be able to travel. We should again be able to host others or go ourselves to spend time with family. And as I said, the end of the Seder is about Lashon Haba Yerushalayim. It's about a hoping for a messianic future and for a better tomorrow and a better next year. And the opening of the door is such a profound physical statement of that, especially this year. When you open the door, you should be singing Lashana Haba Yerushalayim, that we want to open the doors, we want to leave our homes, we want to be able to have a new tomorrow for us, for the whole Jewish people, for all of humanity. And by next Pesach, this tragedy should be behind us, and we should only look forward to good things in the upcoming year.